Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Talia. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm Talia Hibbert. I write sexy, diverse romance. I live with my family and my partner in the UK. Like a lot of writers, I am a huge reader first and foremost. That is probably my number one hobby. And I also like plants and music and video games, anything chill. I'm a big fan of relaxing.
I love it. I think that's what we need more. We need to just relax. We just need to distraction. So I love that you mentioned video games, plants, reading, you know, all the things that we need at this moment.
Yeah, I've adapted well to this current period of nothing but relaxation.
Yeah. So what inspired you to become a writer?
Growing up, I really always wanted to be a writer. I think a lot of bookworms grow up with that feeling because, you know, when you love something, a lot of the time you want to make it and get involved. But for a long time, it did seem like one of those impossible dream careers that weren't really going to happen. You know what I mean? Like wanting to be a pop star and stuff like that. That's what writing was like in my mind. Like that's not gonna happen. But in the end, it was actually my grandmother, who is very no nonsense, takes no prisoners. I really wanted to emulate her attitude, so I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna give it a go. You can't say I didn't try.
I love it. And I love your writing. Like, I actually discover things to play around. I started reading your backlist, and it's like, it's just a breath of fresh air. So I love what you're doing. So just keep doing it.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really kind of you.
Yeah. So what was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, I started out self-publishing, which I still do now. And I only got a deal with a traditional publisher recently, so now I'm a hybrid author. So getting my first book published was both straightforward and complicated, because on the one hand, I just sort of had to decide, okay, I'm going to do this, and then on the other hand, I had to actually do it and write it, learn how to publish, figure out the marketing. So I'd say the journey is made up of just a huge learning curve.
Yeah, I think I can imagine. It's just a lot of it, especially self-publishing. You know, there's no deadlines. You set the deadlines and you set the process and learning how to market, how to put it, format the book and do all the different pieces. It takes a while, you know, just to get it done.
Yeah, definitely.
So what inspired you to write romance books?
Well, romance is my all-time favorite genre. Okay. So it was kind of intimidating to me at first, the thought of writing a romance, because in my mind, that was the highest level of book. But in the end, I found that everything I tried to write, my heart was in the romantic plot and not really anything else. So I was like, I suppose I should just focus on the romance in that case.
And you have written both. You've written some of the darker, some of the angsty romance, and you've written some of the funny rom-coms. So what's your preference in terms of writing?
It definitely depends on my mood and other factors in my life at the time. You know, sometimes you want something very escapist. Mm-hmm. Sometimes usually when I'm feeling like very comfortable in my personal life, that's when I'll write really angsty books because mm-hmm. I have like the spare emotional energy to be crying over fake people. But then when things are a bit more stressful, that's usually when I lean more towards rom-coms.
Yeah, I think, you know, I love both of them. I love a diverse array of genres, but I think right now what I'm tending to go is for the rom-coms, the fun, the funny, the banter, the sense of like a lightness. I think it feels good. Because it's like emotionally, you don't have the emotion to spare, you know, like you don't have the emotional bandwidth to have a tear jerker or an angsty book, you know.
Exactly.
It's like, it's age of hats. Like if you're in the mood for it, go for it and do it, you know. But I have to say, like, I love your current work has been amazing, so.
Oh, thank you.
So let's talk about writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
It varies a bit from book to book, but I always have some sort of an outline.
Okay.
Just so that, you know, when I'm drafting and I'm trying to get the story out quickly, if I have to stop and figure out what I'm supposed to be doing, that slows me down.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to figure out general directions beforehand, but you know, some stories, they unravel really easily, whereas others are a bit more complicated and you have to really get in there before you can see the full picture. So some of my outlines are super detailed and then some of them are just like section by section. Act one does this, act two does this, like that.
That's interesting. So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of your ideas, inspirations, and characters?
I have a lot of notebooks and I use a notebook for each world. So in my head, all of my different books and series, they each belong to a certain kind of universe.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't always clues, like as readers, you might read the books and not know that this series and that series exist in the same universe. But I know. So when I get kind of quick thoughts and ideas, I kind of figure out what world it suits and then I put it in that notebook.
That's amazing. So we may get Easter eggs from different universes.
Definitely.
Oh, I love that. I love it. I love when authors do that. I don't know. There's something to be said of someone who's like, you find an author and you read all their books and then you start seeing like characters or clues from one book to the other. There's like a sense of like, you know, investment that you get out of it. So So do you share your work along the way or do you wait until it's completed for others to read?
I prefer to wait until it's finished because I just get very self-conscious about sharing my work at all.
Yeah.
So it has to be as perfect as possible, which I don't think is a very healthy attitude because, you know, I sometimes get so wound up in making it perfect before it even goes to the editor. So I've like edited my own book 1,000 times when I didn't need to because someone else is going to do that.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So I'm working on that.
Yeah, I think perfection, you know, can impede our growth and our progress. Like sometimes like we're waiting until it's perfect and we don't share it to the world and then it just, you know, we do a disservice. And so sometimes it's good to just kind of like let it just be okay that progress is not perfection, that it doesn't have to be. You just show it to the world. Like that feels better.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right. Now let's talk about Get a Life, Chloe Brown, and Take a Hint, Danny Brown. I have to admit, I read both of them and I adore them for different reasons, but they were both just the right kind of books that I read at the right time. Like they were funny, but they had a heart. They had a sense of like the characters had a growth, and the characters were so well developed. So thank you for doing that amazing work.
Well, thank you. That's really sweet. I'm smiling very wide right now.
That's really good. So in Chloe Brown, Chloe has fibromyalgia and she doesn't let it get a stop in her life. What was important to represent a character with chronic illness within a romance novel?
Well, I have a chronic illness myself. Mm. And so I've always wanted to add to the books that are out there that kind of focus on that sort of representation. Mm-hmm. And most of all, I wanted to show other people like me who are maybe in a more difficult place that I've been in the past, mm-hmm. that you can be chronically ill and still have that fun rom-com kind of life. You aren't kind of doomed to dying alone and discarded and, you know, all those negative stereotypes that we see a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was so amazing to witness. Like she struggled with it, but at the same time she was able to find love and find joy, you mm-hmm. know, and do all the lifeless, like get herself out of her comfort zone and trying different things like riding a bike and, you know, and connecting with mm-hmm. that. I think it brought a sense of like, you know, a character that was well developed. Like it wasn't just like characters like I'm just here for the hero, I'm just here for like getting a life and like overall, and then having the chronic illness, just to know that, you know, it may be something that can hinder her, she didn't let it hinder her life, and it allowed her to still find love, which was so beautiful. So Chloe and Red at the beginning are ads, but her lifeless and the website helps them come together. I really adore the email scene. I think it's the part when the relationships bring the spark. How difficult was to write an enemies to lovers process in this book?
Well, thank you. The email scenes were added during later stages of writing the book because, really? Yeah, they weren't there. And it felt a bit like something was missing. And then my editor and I were talking about it and we were like, oh, clearly they need to be virtually bitching at each other even when they're apart. So we had to put that in there. But I find writing enemies to lovers one of the simplest tropes, because structurally it's really well defined, and it's really in line with the general romantic arc. So, you know, you start out thinking you can't be together, but something forces you together anyway, but there's tension. Well, being enemies takes care of all of that. And then something changes and you see each other more clearly. That's really well suited to the movement kind of from enemies to tentative friends, and it keeps going like that. So I really like writing enemies to lovers.
I love it. I love enemies to lovers. I think there's something to be said about that idea of bickering, the idea they hate each other, and then they're us, and then just coming together. There's something to be said about that process. And I absolutely adore the email scene. That was like my favorite part of the book. Like, I think it just like, it brought in. And I think now that I look back, it's like the perfect, it just reminds me of where we are right now, where everything's so virtual. Like, you're still going to bicker. You're still going to have a conversation. You're still going to get to know the other person, you know, in a place of like, that's just feels real life, like in over email, you know. I think it's like the perfect addiction. So I'm so grateful for you and so grateful for your editor to realize that it was like something to be added to the book. So Red is healing from an abusive relationship. I think it's important to notice that Rhett is the hero and so is not the heroine, because most of the time when we think abusive relationship, we think of the heroine struggling with it. But your hero has this. And so what was so important for Rhett's backstory, and how did it affect Rhett's relationship with Chloe, just the healing from the abusive relationship?
I think it made him more careful with Chloe. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, for a lot of their relationship, she doesn't have that context, but he is obviously very aware of it, and he is trying to deal with that while he's starting something new with Chloe. Mm-hmm. So it made him very conscious of everything that happened between them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it made him a lot more careful and thoughtful than he would have been had he not had that experience. But even when he takes another look at his reactions and thinks, okay, maybe I didn't need to take that so seriously, or maybe I didn't need to worry so much about this. Mm-hmm. I feel like the moments when Red was super careful, even when he decided they were unnecessary, mm-hmm. it was very kind of, it was a freeing experience for him. To be able to say, oh, actually, I was worried, but this is fine, instead of constantly being on guard and having it proven right. Mm-hmm. So basically, I think that it made his relationship with Chloe just very conscious for him, and maybe later for her after she found out certain things or noticed certain things about his reactions.
Yeah, I think in some ways it brought into the forefront the idea of having a healthier relationship, and so being conscious and doing things differently than doing it from the past. I think it just created a more healthier relationship. I think it demonstrated that it's possible. It's possible to get out of an abusive relationship and to do things differently this time around.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's talk about Danny Brown. I have to admit, Danny Brown came at the perfect time. I read this book, and just for the context of this interview is going to go live when Danny Brown publishes, but I read it while the coronavirus hit where I was living. And so Danny Brown came in at the perfect time where I was struggling with reading, and I struggled with anxiety, like just a really strong anxiety issue. And I remember reading and just knowing somebody, it was like amazing to witness somebody else struggle with it and to cope with it. And so I have to admit, it was a perfect reading for the perfect time. And I can't wait for others to see it, because there's a happily ever after, and there's like, it's just so, it's steamy and has all the elements of what we look for in romance, but I think it brings something to the real life that just like, it's a perfect thing to have.
Well, thank you. That's really lovely to hear. And I'm really glad that you feel that way as well.
Yeah, so Danny works in academia, and she's working towards a PhD. She's not yet a doctor, although viral tweets tell her that she's a doctor. So how much research did you conduct to get this part right? Like, she's a teacher, she's publishing, she's doing all those different things, and it seems like it's a very academic focused part.
Yeah, I hate research, so I wasn't looking forward to that. And I'm really lucky because I have a friend, Ali Williams, who is very deep in the academic world, mm-hmm. and she helped me a lot, and she knew exactly what Danny was going through because she's experiencing it herself. So I relied very heavily on Ali for the research part, because I have a degree, but you know, what's the is it called a bachelor's? Yeah. I think that's the degree I have. So that's the extent of my academic experience. So I took a lot of help.
Yeah, like I went to school. I got a master's in higher education. So I worked in academia for about 10 years. And so I remember my the people, my friends who went over for the PhD, and they had to do research, they had to do panels, they had to do all those different things. And so when I was reading this book, I just reminded me of my friends who are going through that PhD process. Like, it's not an overnight process. Like, you don't go to school. You're not just going to school and getting your degree. You have to work towards that. You have to teach. You have to do all these different things. So it was nice to have that, you know, as a reminder within a romance novel that you can find romance while getting your PhD.
Yeah, as long as you schedule very carefully.
Yeah. So. All right, so Sav, how do you say his name?
As far as I've heard, there are different pronunciations depending on, you know, where you're from. But I would say Zafir. But I also have friends who say Zafir. So one of those.
I love it. Well, he's a Swedish hero of all time. He loves romance novels, which I actually have to admit, it was like, I was sold. The moment he was listening to audiobook and it was a CD part, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel the pain. I've been there myself. And his purpose is teaching kids, you know, to get them to deal with their feelings, like just coping, you know, dealing with toxic masculinity and like trying to do something to be of service. That was something really touching. I think what I really identified was, you know, Safir's issue with anxiety. Like, you not only show the symptoms, we demonstrate a solution, you know, what recovery looks like. What inspired you to present this issue with Sav or Safir as opposed to just, you know, any other issue that he would have dealt with?
Well, first of all, I always like to explore living with mental health, and kind of caring for your mental health and the different ways that so many people just have to cope daily, and it's just an ordinary reality. So when I see a chance to represent that with a character, I always try to do that. And I do feel like I went very overboard with Zaf with how like completely swoony ideal romance hero he is. You know, he helps children and he reads romance novels and he cooks and he's really hot. So I also like showing that, you know, people might look at him and think, oh, he's perfect and his life is very smooth sailing and he has everything under control, but he does have things that he has to deal with. And the way he deals with that, really, it's just another part of his strength.
Yeah, I think that just brought, like, it just gave him strength. Like, the way he handled it, the way he was in touch with his feelings, and the way he communicated that with Annie. Like, he actually just shared this stuff. Like, he didn't hide it. He didn't say, like, oh, I'm not dealing with this, you know? Yeah, I'm having a panic attack, but I'm not going to tell you that I'm having a panic attack. Like, he actually was able to say, I'm breathing, you know, this is what's going on, this is what's happening. I think it just brought in a sense of, like, you know, I think for us, when we look at romance, we look at relationships and we think about it, like, is it healthy, is it unhealthy? I think it just brought in a sense of, like, this is a healthy relationship. This is a healthier person. Like, yes, he struggles with grief, he struggles with anxiety, he struggles with, like, just, you know, putting himself out there. But at the same time, like, he's healthier than he has ever been. Like, he is actually showing, like, he can actually be present to a relationship and be of service. So Danny is the prickliest heroine, and I love it. So she has a backstory, and she explains why she acts the way it was. What was important for her character to grow in the relationship? Because she was like, I don't want a relationship. I just want an F buddy. Like, that's what I want. And then just going to see, like, what Sav brings to the relationship to get her to grow into the process to accept, yeah, that, you know, there's a relationship happening, whether she likes it or not.
I like that, whether she likes it or not, it's happening. But yeah, actually, that's the major point of Danny's growth, is that in order for her to have a fulfilling relationship, she has to accept that she is even capable of having a relationship, mm-hmm. which means challenging all the beliefs that she's built up around who she is and her identity. So, you know, in this book, because they are faking a relationship, mm-hmm. you reach the point where she is doing everything that constitutes a relationship, mm-hmm. but her self-image is so affected by her past experiences mm-hmm. that she's staring right at it and she's like, nope, that's not a relationship because it's mm-hmm. me. If I'm involved, it can't be a relationship. mm-hmm. So for her to grow, her growth is kind of represented by her acceptance of the relationship, but really it's all about her and it's all centered very deep inside her.
Yeah, I love it. And I love the ending. Well, I don't want to split it, so I love the actions that she takes for the relationship. Like, she goes above and beyond. Like, once she accepts it, like, this is how Danny is. Like, once she accepts something, she goes above and beyond, and she does, like, she puts 100% as opposed to just kind of like, whatever. So, I really love that. Like, she was able to just embrace the relationship and take it to the next level. So so what can we expect about Eve's book?
Oh gosh. Well, Eve is chaotic mm-hmm. and hilarious, and the book is shaping up to be chaotic and hilarious. So it's hardcore opposites attract. It's enemies to lovers again. The book starts with the hero, Jacob, refusing to give Eve a job, and then she hits him with her car by accident, and he has to go to the hospital, and it all goes downhill from there, really. They are both a ginormous mess, and I love it.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. This is so exciting. So now let's go to round of book recommendations. So this is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Any kind of romance, but I'd say in romance, rather than favorite subgenres, I have like favorite tropes mm-hmm. That come up a lot. So I really love anything with forced proximity. And I love like friends to lovers, marriage of convenience, anything that forces them to be together all the time.
Do you like the just one bed trope when you have that and you're like, ooh.
Oh, yes. Oh no, what are we going to do?
Not you. I don't know. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
I love it. Who's your favorite author?
Oh my gosh, this is a very difficult. Can I say? Okay, excellent. Right now, my favorite authors are Therese Bahari, Tasha Suri, and Roan Parish. But that it changes a lot because everyone is just so good.
Yeah, that's true. What are your top two favorite books of all time?
Oh, this is the hardest question ever. But I do have a list. So Hookshot by Kennedy Ryan, mm-hmm. The Hating Game by Sally Thorne, mm-hmm. and Trashed by Mia Hopkins.
Ooh, I love it. what has been a book you read this year that you love, or last year?
Oh, no, recently I read Think I Might Love You by Christina C. Jones, and I have loved Christina C. Jones for ages, but I got behind on her books. So I picked this one up and it was just, oh my God, I was laughing the whole time I was reading it. I was in a room with other people and they kept being like, why are you laughing so much? Relax. And I was like, I'm sorry. It's so funny. Like, I'm remembering it now and I just want to go and read it again. It's so good.
Gosh, I love it. I may pick that one up, so thank you. So tell us where I can find you online.
Well, I am at Talia Hibbert on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm Talia Hibbert on Facebook, and I also have a group on there called Talia Hibbert's Hopeless Romantics, where we talk about books and memes and Animal Crossing and all sorts. And I recently joined Book and Main Bites, where I share excerpts from my books. And surprise, I am Talia Hibbert on there as well. So,
thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I've had a wonderful time.
If you enjoy this podcast, feel free to share it with friends and share a review on iTunes. This is the best way to support the show. Want to join the Romance Loving community, make new friends, and get book recommendations? Join our Patreon, Romance Book Club. For $5 a month, you'll be part of a virtual book club, an Instagram chat, and get monthly book recommendations. Please note I'll be donating 10% of the profit to a COVID-19 relief fund each month. To sign up, just join the link in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.